Broadcasting from the TripInsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida.
This is
Cruise Radio.
Hey, what's up? How's it going? My name is Doug Parker. Thanks for checking out this bonus episode of Cruise Radio. An interview with former cruise line executive Art Sabarsky. We tackle a lot of things like lifeguards on cruise ships. We're talking about Alaska and the ships sailing up there. And just a one-on-one chat with Art and I about his thoughts on the current state of the industry. I'm just curious. I want your help on this. If you want more of these interviews and you like this, let me know. If you don't, I'll do less of them. Very simple, because I am here for you. So I appreciate that. All right, before we get to Art, Cruise Radio News. It's our Cruise Radio Facebook group. Come join the cruise conversation. Also, our website. Have a new search feature on there and some deck plans as well. Take a look at it at cruiseradio.net. All right, here's our interview with Art Sabarsky. We taped late April in Fort Lauderdale.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. So we first met on Norwegian Epic, July of 2010. LeBron James just got traded to Miami. Is that what it was?
I think that was the night that he made the announcement that he was taking his talents to South Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And the only people that were happy about that were the people from Miami, or who, Heat fans from out of the state. Because the way in which he did it, the arrogance that he showed with that,
mm-hmm.
was funny. But hearing about it, getting the word while we were out at sea, and it was still relatively early days for cell phones.
Yeah, weren't you one of the people that were keeping tabs on it?
Yes. Well, I had my little flip phone,
yeah.
And people were people like Stuart Sharon and Marjorie Lant were giving me so much grief about having a flip phone. But I was the first one to get the word. Somehow
awesome.
I received it quicker than they did with all their fancy phones.
That's great.
So it, from my standpoint, it worked out well.
Nice. And then from there, we saw each other again on Celebrity Reflection, I think. And then we've just become friends. We sailed later that year on Carnival Liberty for Funship 2.0 and
right.
Had lots of, what do they call those, yards of beer?
They have a name for it, but it's the really tall ones that are almost embarrassing to admit that you drink. But I've enjoyed the friendship because being a little bit older than you, being like essentially twice your age,
mm-hmm.
okay, and coming at it from a corporate background, to me, part of the joy is listening to other people and hearing their experiences and seeing them experiencing the growth of the cruise industry.
Yeah.
The industry now that I joined the industry really in 83 when I started handling Sipmar Cruises advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Sipmar doesn't even exist anymore. They were bought by Princess in 88. Cruising is now 30 some odd years later, exactly the same as it was when I started, in that you've got a pointy end at the front,
mm-hmm.
you've got a round end or squared off end at the back. A cruise takes you places. It gives you a place to stay. It feeds you. It entertains you. It gives you things to do. And it pampers you like crazy. That hasn't changed. What has changed is the way they've done it. And people that are travel agents, especially, who are coming into it right now,
mm-hmm.
have no idea how good it is compared to what it used to be. And in a way, it doesn't matter. When I hear Arnold Donald, who's doing a great job for Carnival Corp, talking about this is the golden age of cruising,
mm-hmm.
that was a phrase I heard back in the middle 80s, 1980s, not 1880s, about that then was the golden age of cruising, because it was when, right after Royal Princess, the original Royal Princess came out, which is the ship that revolutionized cruising.
Mm-hmm.
It had the flat deck design as opposed to the ships that had the old curve in the deck. It was all outside rooms. It was the first ship that had 25% balconies.
Wow.
I mean, it was unheard of, the things that they did with that ship back in sort of the late 80s. And so things have continued to evolve amazingly.
Back then, I'm just curious, like, so in the 80s, was only the affluent and wealthy cruising, or could anyone afford to cruise? Because, like, I just bought a cruise on Carnival Liberty last month, and I paid $169 for it.
Wow.
How was pricing back then?
Pricing back then, relative to now, you hear cruise executives whining about the mm-hmm. fact that prices have not kept up with the market. Partially, and being one of them, at one point, I think they've done that to themselves. But back then, yes, people, relatively speaking, with not that much money could cruise, because you had cruise lines like Home Lines, Holland America Lines, Sipmar, even Princess back when they first started, Norwegian was out. And all those ships all had upper level categories and they had lower level categories. And the lower level categories were very inexpensive by comparison. The rooms were inside. They were smaller, oftentimes bunk beds. Mm-hmm. But you could still get cruises. I don't remember the exact prices, sure. But in those days, most rooms on a ship, whether you call them cabins, staterooms, or just rooms, didn't have TVs.
Okay.
They didn't have refrigerators. They didn't have all the fancy amenities that even the most basic of ships have now. They certainly did not have a veranda. And yet, even modestly priced ships now, almost every room has a veranda. Mm-hmm. But back then, the whole theory about cruising was you don't spend much time in your room. You're out on deck, you're eating, you're in port, whatever. And so you didn't spend much time in your room except for sleeping, changing, and whatever else takes place. But the rooms were way more basic, and that is one very big difference. But the rooms were just more basic.
I remember cruising as a kid with my parents on a fantasy class ship, and I remember it being like it was a couple $1,000s for a 3-night cruise for 5 of us, and we were in an ocean view room. So comparatively speaking, from then to now, it seems like cruising is a great value.
Cruising is an astonishing value, mm-hmm. In two ways. One, because it hasn't kept up with inflation. And 9/11 did have an impact on that, let's be realistic. But compared to, if you take any class of ship, whether it be fantasy class, whether it be quantum class, whether it be crystal, whether it be NCL, whether it be Victory Cruises, mm-hmm. on the Great Lakes, and you compare that to the equivalent hotel, what you get on a cruise for your dollars is going to be a much better deal and way less inexpensive than a land-based trip.
Have you ever sailed on Victory?
I have not.
Side story here is that ship was laid up in Jacksonville for years.
Okay.
And my dad's a retired ship captain and river pilot, so he actually piloted that ship from Jacksonville to dry dock to get it beefed up, make it seaworthy before it went up north to the Great Lakes area.
So your dad was a ship captain. Mm-hmm. And you got a pilot's license at 19.
Yeah.
There's way more to you and your family than most people would know, of course.
I like to keep it modest. You went from advertising. Did you go right into Crystal Cruises then?
Yes. I was in the advertising business from 1965 until 1988. And I joined Crystal. I was recommended for the job by someone who I knew at my SITMAR days, whose advertising I handled. I was the original senior VP of marketing at Crystal, and I was properly qualified for about 10% of my job. I had no idea what I was doing for a lot of it, but then again, I was new at it, and so it was a great experience, and we were luxury, and we were very, very highly rated right from the beginning. We were placed in the marketplace with Royal Viking Line, and Cunard in those days, which had the two ships, Sagafjord and Vistafjord, which were considered to be the most luxurious. And we redefined what luxury cruising was like.
Did Crystal Harmony come out under your tenure there?
Yes, Crystal Harmony came out. Maiden Voyage was July 24th, 1990.
And it was early too, right?
It depends on the definition of early. Okay. There were too many ships in those days that were being delivered late. Mm-hmm. So we hedged on when it was going to come out. We built in some extra time.
Gotcha.
But we had an incentive with the contract with NYK Line over in Japan where we built the ship. That was our parent company. We built the ship at Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. Mm-hmm. And we had an incentive deal with them in terms of they deliver early, a little, differently,
sure.
Whatever. Our first cruise was July 24th, 1990 to Alaska. I was with Crystal up until 95, after we delivered Crystal Symphony. Mm-hmm. And then there were some management changes. And I left in 95, and I did some consulting work in between for Carnival Corporation. And then in spring 96, I started for Celebrity. And I was with Celebrity for 2 years. And I would have been with Celebrity forever if we had not gotten back bought by Royal Caribbean during my time. And I got treated beautifully by Royal Caribbean and by Richard Fain especially. But we were the stepchild brand that a lot of people there didn't want. And so when NCL came my way, Norwegian Cruise Line came my way, with an incredible offer, a giant promotion package to go along with it, in early 98, I had to take it.
Right around the start of freestyle cruising.
Right around the start of freestyle cruising, yes. Actually, and I will say this, Colin Veitch came in as president after the takeover, but 6 months before he did, we had our annual executive committee meeting, and the subject of sort of freestyle cruising came up, and I discussed it with Colin actually when he first started, and it was something that the parent company, Star Cruises, was doing. Mm-hmm. And he just got really excited about it, and what they came out with not that long thereafter has revolutionized cruising. Perhaps no other single moment has galvanized the certainly the contemporary category the way they did, and they forced every other cruise line to make changes accordingly. And here we are 17 years later right now, and it's just accepted that that's the way cruising is going to be.
Yeah.
With freedom of choice, freedom of when you do this, freedom of, let's be realistic, you still don't have total choice. It's not like you can go to a show lounge mm-hmm. and say, okay, put on Grease for me now. Okay, it's not like you can go to every restaurant and say, okay, I'm ready. I mean, you're surrounded by a whole lot of other people, and they do have to have schedules, mm-hmm. but there is certainly more flexibility now than there ever was. And so now, for the last 17 years, I've just sat back and retired and enjoyed. I think my last cruise 2 weeks ago was my 119th cruise.
Wow.
In that time. So, yeah, I'm out on ships a lot.
Norwegian started cruising from Seattle up to Alaska under your watch too, right?
Well, we signed the contract under my watch.
Awesome.
We signed the contract, and I believe it was 99. We were going to be the first cruise line to sail round trip to Alaska out of Seattle. Most ships in those days were sailing round trip out of either San Francisco, which Crystal was doing, or round trip out of Vancouver, which was the primary port. Vancouver is a great pre and post city. It really is. But there were significant advantages to sailing in and out of Seattle. Number one, Seattle is also a beautiful place. And by Seattle, you're not dealing with customs the same way you are with Canada.
Yeah.
So Seattle became, and now is, again, accepted for what it is. The reason I hedged is because the first sailings out of Seattle were after I left, after I left NCL.
Well, yesterday we were sitting in the Norwegian press conference, and Norwegian Bliss is their next ship coming out, and they're building, they're saying it's purpose-built for Alaska and the Caribbean, which, whatever that means. But what do you think about Norwegian Bliss, like a ship that big, sailing from Seattle up to the Alaska area?
Well, you've got two things that you have to take into consideration there. One is the size of mm-hmm. the ship. Sailing on a ship that's carrying 3,000-4,000 people is a very, very different experience than going to Alaska and sailing on a ship that has 30 people on, which you can do with American Safari mm-hmm. cruises. It's a very different experience just in some of these ports. The number of people that are going into a specific port right now, Ketchikan, Sitka, Juneau, whatever, can be overwhelming to the port. The Alaska ports have become homogenized to a very sad degree. But Bliss, they know what they're doing up there. They've got all the ground operations in place. There are a tremendous number of shore excursions that people can do right now. Bliss, when they started talking about purpose built for Alaska, I really didn't know what that meant.
Right.
And to be quite honest, I still don't know exactly what that means. They seeing the renderings of those forward observation lounges looks terrific, because Alaska is a visual experience, and if you don't have enough place for people to see out, it's going to be a problem. One thing they announced, which I did not know, was in their Haven, which is the upscale area, where they have the pool in the Haven, they're going to have a roof, the sides closed if there's inclement weather, which can be very good for Alaska. But the hull artwork looks great. But the hull artwork, to me, is very pretty, but that doesn't necessarily make it custom-built for Alaska. But based on what they've revealed so far, it looks great.
I want to switch gears here. I want to ask you your thoughts on, of course, Disney Cruise Line was one of the first cruise lines to hire lifeguards at their pools. Royal Caribbean did it. Norwegian Cruise Line just announced that between now and 2018, they'll have them fleet-wide. What do you think of this shift? I mean, do you think that it's a good idea, or do you think it's the parents' responsibility to watch their kids?
I don't have kids. I've never had kids. And I see, whether it be a land-based resort property with kids there or a cruise ship, I see kids running around and doing things on cruise ships. Sometimes they do it well-behaved, and sometimes they act like kids. Which they're kids. They're entitled to. When it comes to the swimming pools, I personally think it's the parents' responsibility to control their children and to monitor their safety. Every time I read about a child drowning or nearly drowning in a shipboard pool, my first reaction is, where were the parents?
It's heartbreaking.
Because it's heartbreaking to hear of a two-year-old kid. But to me, why is a two-year-old kid on his own around a swimming pool? To me, I just don't get it. I know that parents are more permissive on cruise ships than they are on land vacations. I understand that. But you know, I've been at this for a long time, and if I'm not mistaken, no child has ever gone over the side of a cruise ship. Okay? Ships are properly built. Kids aren't climbing over the railings. Kids climb.
Yeah, they do.
That's something they do. Parents just sometimes are just too permissive with what they let their kids do on cruise ships.
Yeah.
And I could say that the lifeboat thing is the PC world that we live in right now. And I'm if that's the case, I'm happy to see it. After what happened with the child who was dragged off by an alligator at Disney a year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, last June.
It was horrible. I mean, what a horrifying thing that would be for parents. But why was the kid on his own?
Sure.
You know? And so I don't think I can make any proper value judgment, but I think it's good for the cruise lines to do that. I was on Harmony of the Seas, and I talked to the, it was just 2 weeks ago, and I talked to the lifeguard supervisor about what his role was. And he says, no matter what we do, we can't replace the parents. Because there are seven of them. There are seven lifeguards. Yeah. How can they control 2,000 kids, 18 and under, and 6,400 people in total on a ship that size? So it still comes down to parental control, which is the Carnival philosophy. It still comes down to parents.
I was wondering how long. I'm sure Carnival Cruise Line is going to follow suit. I mean, they almost have to, wouldn't they, with Norwegian and Royal doing it?
I asked them that question yesterday, and they have no plans at this point.
It's interesting.
To their way of thinking, it is up to the parents to monitor it. They do have pool monitors, but it's not the same thing as a trained lifeguard. I would submit in the not-too-distant future, they're going to have to, because if their two main competitors in general, Royal and NCL, have it, and if the main family cruise line has it, Disney, they're going to have to have it, you're right.
Yeah, totally. Across the board, we're seeing more cruise lines becoming more inclusive and starting to eliminate the solo supplement fee, both on the Riverside and the Ocean Cruise Line side. What are your thoughts on this trend?
All-inclusive is a very, very difficult term, because all-inclusive just means, to the great degree, whether you're paying for it up front or you're paying it piecemeal. And it doesn't matter whether that's port taxes, booze, shore excursions, whatever. Whatever it is that you're buying, whatever it is that you're getting, you're paying for it. And that same thing exists with any hospitality form. So I think it's great to have consistent pricing. I wish more of the mainstream markets would get away from the tipping, for example. All the main cruise lines just announced an increase in their per diem tipping, with different tipping amounts for regular staterooms versus the suites. It just adds one more level of discord and confusion. It's very difficult for travel agents to keep track of everything. If all the tipping were included, the price would go up. People would pay more. There would be a period of adjustment. They'd adjust. Life would go on. Single subs are difficult because, except for the cruise lines that have rooms that are built for singles, you have two beds in a room, for the most part, and if one of them goes empty, that's revenue lost. And with everybody controlled by the stock analysts these days, if you don't fill up your ships, you pay the price in the stock market.
Coming from someone who used to work in the cruise industry, would you personally like to see the gratuities rolled into the price of the cruise and just forget about the envelope system, forget about the adding the $12, $13 per person per day charge?
Yes. Probably the simplest answer I can give you is yes. I just think it would be so much easier. It would make it so much easier for people on board. They wouldn't have to worry about it.
It was funny. I was on a sailing 2 years ago out of Jacksonville, and I was sitting with this family, and gratuities came up, and she's like, well, how do you do gratuities? I said, well, I just prepay my gratuities. And the lady says, oh, we take ours off on the very last night. Our travel agents told me we didn't have to pay it. And I was like, face plant. Oh, really? So she had a family of five. And I'm like, they're busting their butt for you. And then you're going to, when you leave the main dining room the last night, try to, yeah.
But you know, you're looking at some, it's about $500 for a family of five. It's about, you know, it's $15 a day per person. You couldn't get that kind of service at a land-based resort for $15.
No.
And I, for people who are that cheap, that they would go to that extent to wipe it out, or for a travel agent to recommend that, I think that's reprehensible.
Totally.
I really do. I'm just one of those people who tips more on a percentage basis when I go to less expensive restaurants, because those people are still working just as hard at fancier restaurants, and they get less tipping because the price of the meal is cheaper. To me, service is service, and if I get good service, I have a place I go to once a week when I'm in town. It happens to be a sushi buffet restaurant. And practically before I get to my seat, they all know me, and my iced tea is waiting for me at my table.
Okay? That's awesome.
It's incredible service, okay?
Yeah.
On cruise ships, I know there are people that do that. I know there are nationalities that don't like tipping. And then when they come to on a U.S. ship, they feel they shouldn't have to tip. That's just bogus, and I think fortunately, it's a very small percentage of people, and it's made up for by people that overtip. It's made up for people that are on luxury ship. They will still tip people even when tips are included.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I'd be very happy if tipping were just not a factor. I just don't.
Because I'm sailing on Carnival Legend from Hawaii to Australia in September.
Wow.
And they actually roll the gratuities into the price of the whole cruise.
Wonderful.
So I like that.
It's great. You don't have to think about it. How long cruise is that?
17 nights.
How many days at sea?
I think it's going to be like 8 days total. There's a ton of South Pacific islands on the itinerary.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Are you going to the Tuamotus and the Marquesas? At all?
You know what? I'm not really sure. It's like New Caledonia, Bora Bora, Moorea.
Right.
Like all those.
Part of the Spice Islands, also known as Tahiti.
Yep.
Okay.
So.
Are you going to Fiji?
Yes.
Oh, man.
You can't beat it. It was like $1,300 and the Australian dollar is weaker than ours right now. So it was really like 25% cheaper because I had to pay in AUS.
Okay.
Yeah. Or AUD. So.
That's going to be a great cruise.
Yeah, so
wow.
Totally looking forward to that. In closing here, because I've had you for almost 30 minutes here, what's your favorite itinerary right now?
Well, there are places I haven't gone, so I can't include them.
We've always had a good time in the Med, though.
I love the Med.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Med all the way from east to west. It is so port-rich in terms of the experience. And there are so many different cultures along the Med, and they stand out from each other in so many significant ways. There's so much history in the area. I'm heartbroken by what happened in the Black Sea because it wiped out a whole cruise area. I'm heartbroken whenever I see an attack in Istanbul or any of the other ports. But I would say I would never get tired of going to the Med.
We had a fun day in Naples. You and I did. Well, I guess a group of us did.
A group of us did.
You pizza brought us, day. Yeah, you had brought us on a pizza and beer tour, right? Is that what it was?
It was pizza and beer tour. Naples, obviously, is the home of the original pizza. Mm-hmm. Margherita pizza was created there to look like the Italian flag, red, white, and green. I love everything Italian, mm-hmm. so that has something to do with it. But there are Naples is a city that has a lot of love-hate to it because for a while there it was considered to be very dangerous. And for a while there they had trouble with their unions, even with garbage and stuff. But Naples is a thriving, disparate, wonderful city right in the heart of things. And so, again, I don't get tired of going there.
You walked us through this square. And it was very famous. I can't remember what square it was.
There's
a lot of statues
square.
In
it's
it.
The main square, yeah.
And we found a pizza place right in that square, just off that square, mm-hmm. Last summer. And I was like, I remember Art brought us here.
Brandy's.
We sat there and we ate pizza and we drank beer and wine for like three, almost 4 hours, really. But there was a group of us.
Okay.
We had a great conversation, great time, and just...
One of my favorite foods is grilled calamari. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big... fried calamari fan, because I think you lose the taste of the calamari. But every different place along the Mediterranean, calamari is really big, and they all grill it in with different spices and mm-hmm. stuff. So that's one of my favorite things, whether it be Istanbul, whether it be in Greece, whether it be in Italy, whatever. Unfortunately, I also know people that will take a cruise and never get off the ship and eat. So...
That was me on my first med cruise.
Okay.
You changed me on that, though.
But you know something? You're not alone. A lot of people go on a cruise, and partially because they're afraid of the foreign.
Mm-hmm. That was me. I was very intimidated.
Okay. And I was my first time also. And also, a lot of people figure, since they've already paid for the meals on the ship, why should they spend any more money on food ashore? And that's just not restricted to the entry-level cruise lines. There are people who go on luxury cruises where the food is included, and the food is sensational, obviously, but also where booze is included and tips are included with the fare. And they also feel why should they go eat a meal in Naples mm-hmm. or Istanbul when the food is already paid for and on the ship? So, but everybody, and again, everybody does it, and everybody comes back, and 99% of people come back from a cruise and have a great time.
We also had a good day in Mallorca, didn't we?
We did.
Tapas and more beer. There's a theme here.
There's a theme here. And with you and me specifically, it's beer. And there was a question that they had at the main session. They had some trivia type questions. And they asked, one of the questions was, how much beer is served on an average day on a cruise ship? And it was an A, B, C, D. And under my breath, I'm thinking, well, it depends on whether Doug and I are on board.
That's true.
Food is the number one memory of a cruise, mm-hmm. and if depending on the itinerary, I was just on a very basic itinerary that went to Nassau, St. Martin, and St. Thomas. Food ashore was not the primary focus of my experience, because for me, I'm spoiled, I'm jaded, and they're just very basic.
All right, man. I know you got to get going here, but thanks for taking the time to talk with me, man. We don't get to do it enough.
This is fun.
Yeah.
You were really prepared today. Let me pay you a compliment. You know, usually we have more of a rambling conversation, but you really were focused today. You've come a long way in the 7 years since I met you.
I know.
You really have. It's just a personal reflection. It's nice to see that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, buddy.
So what you just heard was pretty much a raw and unedited interview of Art and I's conversation. Thank you to him, too, because we were only supposed to chat for like 10 minutes, and we wound up going a little bit over 30. So it was great to talk to Art there. If you like these interviews, as I said in the beginning of the show, let me know. If you don't, let me know, and I'll do less of them. You can write me an email, doug@cruiseradio.net, or send me a tweet or Facebook @cruiseradio. So with that said, I'll talk to you a little later on in the week. Thank you so much for being here.
Cruise Radio is produced weekly at the tripinsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida. Hear Cruise Radio on iHeartRadio, the Stitcher Radio Network, iTunes, or at cruiseradio.net. For sales and marketing opportunities, email sales@cruiseradio.net. I'm your announcer.